Good evening, welcome to part two of the little-known halachas of Bikur Cholim. Thank you to Karen for putting out the reminders and the link for part one. We'll just review quickly what we did last week for those who missed last week. First, we asked why is there no bracha on the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. We had a number of answers, one of them being that whenever you do a mitzvah that involves another person, you can't make a bracha because they might refuse, and your bracha will be levatala, like the case of the third grader who wants his friend's fruit up. So he says a shahakal, and his friend now has to give him. Another example that we saw was that we don't want to make a bracha that involves thanking Hashem for somebody else's pain, which we saw that there's no bracha for. When the Beis Din has a mitzvah to kill a person who's chayiv misa, they were Mechal Shabbos, they murdered, whatever they did, the executioner doesn't make a bracha, even though there is a mitzvah to kill that person. Because we don't want to make a bracha for somebody else's pain. We also saw last week the bit of math that we learned about asymptotes, that when you visit a sick person, you take away 1/60th of their sickness. And how does that work? Just bring 60 people. That was the Gemara's question. Bring 60 people and they'll get better. So the Gemara answered that it's like an asymptote. It approaches zero, but it never reaches it. Whenever you bring a person, that takes away 1/60th of whatever's there. So you go down and down and down and down, but there's always something there that you're just taking away part of, but there's always a little bit left. We also pointed out that the very first line in the tour in Bikur Cholim is that you should daven for yourself, that you should stay healthy so you don't need Bikur Cholim. That's an important thing to keep in mind when you think of Hilchas Bikur Cholim. And then we got to the main point. The main point was that the mitzvah Bikur Cholim has two parts, neither of which we really think of, and therefore we sometimes miss the boat entirely. Part number one is davening for the person, and we saw the Ramban, which is quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, says if a person doesn't daven for somebody, they might not even fulfill the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. If you don't daven for the person when you visit them, you might not fulfill the mitzvah at all. And secondly, we saw the word Bikur does not really mean to visit in the Torah. The word Bikur in the Torah really means what? What does Bikur mean? To investigate, to inspect, to analyze. Correct. So you have to inspect the person who's sick. In other words, see that they have their needs taken care of. And of course, nowadays in a hospital, most physical needs are taken care of, most medical needs are taken care of. What's left? Only the emotional needs. So that's what modern Bikur Cholim has sort of become. What else did we do last week? We had some unusual suggestions why we always daven for somebody with their mother's name. We won't get into the details, but those who are here remember that. And finally, we're ready to start today. Okay, so we'll dedicate our learning for the Gili Neshama of Kreindl Bas Yitzchak, whose yahrzeit is around now. Let's talk about different kinds of people doing Bikur Cholim and doing Bikur Cholim for different kinds of people. We'll start with a Kohen visiting a hospital. So first of all, this whole issue is not so nogea, except if somebody in this room would be the one being visited, because any woman who's a Bas Kohen, my wife is a Bas Kohen, is not obligated to follow the halachas of Tumah for a Kohen. But if you want to tell the male members of your family, could they go visit a hospital? Well, that's going to be a little bit complicated and very dependent on the circumstances. And given the circumstances, a Kohen who does wish to go to the hospital, or for that matter, the same question is to become a doctor, where they're going to have to do gross anatomy, and even for a dentist who also does gross anatomy, these questions are serious questions that they have to ask a shayla with the details at hand. Yeah.
The issue of a woman.
Okay, that's a different question. I'll try to get there if I remember in 2 minutes. Just let's understand what is the question. The Torah says that a Kohen cannot become Tameh to a mace, to a corpse. How does somebody become Tameh? How do you get the cooties? Well, in elementary school, the way we got the cooties is if we were touched. That's one way to get the cootie, to get Tumah from a mace. There's another two ways, at least, perhaps more. Another way, which is not so common, is if you carry the mace. Let's say you don't touch the mace. You just have the mace in a box on a stretcher, and you're just carrying the box or the coffin or the stretcher. That's also going to make the person who's carrying the mace tameh. That's not so applicable. What's most applicable is something called tumas ohel, tumah of being in the same tent, in the same under the same roof. Now, that means that anybody who was ever in a funeral parlor became tameh by simply being under the same roof as the coffin, as the dead body. That's why, of course, at levayas, kohanim always stand outside. I was actually at a levaya a week and a bit ago, and it was interesting that there were two kohanim of the speakers, two rabbis whose last name happened to be Kahn or Cohn, and they both spoke over the microphone from outside the chapel, and they were wired in. Let's say you're in America. So in America, we assume the majority of the dead people at any given hospital are probably not Jewish. So does a non-Jewish body cause tumah that a Kohen has to avoid? So if it comes to touching, yes, that's a problem. So a Kohen cannot work in a morgue or work in some kind of... be on a Chevr Kadisha for... no, a Chevr Kadisha for Goyim, I guess. A Goy cannot work with dead bodies, even if they're not Jewish. But could a Goy be in the same ohel, the same building, the same hospital, as a non-Jewish dead body? Well, that is a machlokas. That is a machlokas. And we're not going to get into the details, but just keep in mind, these shilas are very, very significant. Where do they come especially significant is if there's a Kohen whose wife is expecting. Is he allowed to accompany his wife to the hospital? And everyone's giving me dirty looks, like, of course he can. What kind of a question is that? Why? Why should that be different than just visiting any old person where it might be Aser, maybe even Doraisa, perhaps? The answer is, if you're allowed to be Mechala Shabbos to bring, if the husband is allowed to be Mechala Shabbos to bring his wife to the hospital, he's allowed to be Mechalel, things that are equally like Shabbos, or certainly less than Shabbos, like becoming Tameh. So, a Kohen, let's assume, will be able to accompany his wife to the hospital because, yes, he's breaking the Torah, but it's allowed for her emotional health. However, after visiting somebody else, there it's much more complicated and a hashayla must be asked halach lamaisa. Keep in mind that in Eretz Yisrael it's going to be much more chomer, because in Eretz Yisrael, let's say, and some of you have probably seen outside of Shaarei Tzedek and other hospitals, there's a sign. It doesn't say we have dead bodies in the basement. It doesn't say that. It says kohanim may enter or kohanim may not enter. The reason for that is because in Eretz Yisrael we assume most of the people, or at least a significant portion of the people, are Jewish, and therefore every body that would be there is definitely going to cause tumah. So in Eretz Yisrael, it's more of a severe question. In Chutz La'aretz, where the bodies are probably Gentile bodies which do not give over tumah, there it is a bit more lenient, but again, a shayla has to be asked halacha l'maisa. An interesting question, which I just never thought of, but the answer is somewhat obvious, but it's important to speak out, because the poskim do discuss it. Is it proper, appropriate, inappropriate for a man to visit a woman, or for a woman to visit a man? Let's assume, and I'm sure this is correct with people here, some of you visit the hospital, Columbia Presbyterian, the nursing home, and the young women, the old women. Let's say there's a gentleman who's in the hospital. So I'm sure you've all sort of hesitated at the door. Should I go in? Should I not go in? Is it appropriate? Is it not appropriate? Is it right? It's a mitzvah. Maybe it's not. Okay, so Rav Shlomo Zalman says, just like nicham aveilim, we definitely do nicham aveilim for an avel of the opposite gender, so too, bikur chom of the opposite gender is a mitzvah, is appropriate, but with a word of caution. There, the focus of the mitzvah should be, like we saw, what's the main two parts of Bikur Cholim? Not just sitting and schmoozing about everything in life, but making sure their needs are taken care of, making sure that you daven on their behalf, and being appropriately careful with the nature of the conversation. Of course, you have to be careful with Yichud. If there ever comes, usually in hospitals it's not such a problem because the doors are unlocked, nurses could come in at any point. Just something to be aware of if you're visiting somebody in their house. You have to be careful with yichud. Even if you're visiting an 85-year-old man you know, in his house, there still is a halacha of yichud, as we learned when we did yichud about 9 months ago. What about, let me ask you guys a question. Is there a mitzvah, is it okay, or is it even a mitzvah, to visit goyim who are sick? Along similar lines, we'll discuss in a minute, is it proper, is it allowed, to daven for the health of goyim who are sick? So here it's an explicit in the Shulchan Aruch, I'll read you the five words, mevakrim chole ovdei kochavim. We visit the sick of ovdei kochavim. Mipnei darkei shalom. We know that there are a lot of halachos that even though there might not be a specific mitzvah obligation like we have to our brothers and our sisters, but mipnei darkei shalom, to maintain social harmony, to maintain peace, to maintain a sense of appropriateness with our neighbors and with the people with whom we interact, that's called darkei shalom, ways of peace. So we do visit goyim. Now it's interesting to note that that halacha applies in numerous areas. Tzedakah also. We've talked about Meiser a few months ago in the Shiurim. Tzedakah also. We have the same principle that you are allowed to give tzedakah to a Gentile because of this idea of Darkei Shalom. And here too, you're allowed to visit sick people because of Darkei Shalom. This is very significant because if you're a chaplain, I don't know how many of you are chaplains, but I actually do have a cousin, a female cousin, who is a chaplain in a hospital. So yes, you, even though you might not want to go by the name rabbi, you could become a chaplain even if you're not a rabbi. So you could just, I don't know what, if you needed an official clergy title, but women certainly can be chaplains. Maybe they don't need so many in, you know, New York where there are probably rabbis available, but out of town, certainly my wife's aunt is a chaplain. So there, of course, you could visit Beis Din Shulchan Aruch, anyone who's in the hospital. Now, let me share with you a beautiful shaila that was asked, and we'll go through some of the parts of the answer which I thought were fascinating. This shaila was presented to Rav Avadya Yosef in Yechaveh Da'as. Rav Avadya Yosef has two sets of shailas and tshuvos. One is Yechaveh Da'as, one is Yabia Omer. Both come from the same pasuk that we say on Shabbos morning. So in Yechaveh Da'as, volume 6, in the last siman, the question that he asks is, I'll read it, it's cute the way he presents it. She'ela mi ger tzedek. A ger tzedek asked me the following question. Can he daven for his father, who is very ill? That's part one. And secondly, after his father dies, can he say Kaddish for his deceased Gentile father? So we'll talk about it one step at a time. If I would ask you about, before we get to davening, we know that davening is just a part of taking care of people. The Bikur Cholim is essentially take care of the sick person. Davening for them is the prime way to take care of somebody in a certain sense. Of course, not doesn't mean you don't take care of them physically, but also we take care of them by davening for them. What about just taking care of goyim? Are you allowed to take care of a guy who's sick? Well, bring me a proof from history, from a big personality in history, that will definitely answer the question one way or another. Everybody knows the answer. What do you say? Elisha, okay, you're going back. We're going to get to Elisha soon. But yes, you're right. Elisha did daven for Naaman, right? Naaman, yes. And that's true, yes. We have a proof from Elisha, from Tanakh, that Elisha davened for Naaman. Bring me something more recent than history. A big personality. What do you say? The Rambam was a doctor and he lived in Egypt. Egypt. It was in Alexandria, I believe. In fact, by the way, totally tangential, nothing to do with this. Maybe we'll get a series about this. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that says, you shall not live in Egypt. Okay? So the Rambam, by the way, while he was living in Egypt for quite a few years, if not decades perhaps, signed all of his letters, Moshe ben Maimon, right after that he said, who violates the Isra of, or violates a number of Isurim, or who violates the Isra of not living in Egypt. So it's interesting, like, what's the deal? If it's us, then how did he do it? If it's not us, then why did he sign that he's violating the Isurim? Okay, that's just a historical curiosity. Yeah, the Rambam, certainly, we know from his own writings, he's the, you know, if you want to think of the quintessential Jewish doctor, we have Maimonides Hospital named after him, Maimonidean Oath, and he was a doctor, he healed all the Yishmaelim who lived in Egypt. Well, let me ask you a question. Maybe that's only because they're Yishmaelim. What's unique about Yishmaelim in terms of the beliefs of Muslim people, the beliefs of Islam? Do we believe in the same God? Let's assume yes. Do they believe in any additions to the God? Let's assume no. So we basically believe in the same God. So are they Avodah Zarah? Ovdei Avodah Zarah? The Rambam writes clearly that they are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah, and so passes the Shulchan Aruch. That Yishmaelim, who lived in Egypt, are not Ovdei Avodah Zarah. But perhaps people who are pagans, idolaters, maybe those kinds of people, actually, we might not be permitted to heal. Let's assume that for now, that if you come across a pagan idolater, you have to be a little bit, you have to ask a rabbi in terms of how to take care of them. Let's talk about something much more halacha l'maisa, where we live. What about Christianity? Is Christianity considered avodah zarah? Is Christianity not considered avodah zarah? It's machlokas. We, certainly Ashkenazim, assume that, a little complicated. What would happen? I'm the rabbi, let's have the shuls. I go up there, and one Shabbos morning, I start preaching about the Trinity. Would that be good for the image of our shul? Yes? No? So you're saying it's Avodah Zarah? Is it Avodah Zarah? It's not Avodah Zarah. Okay, so it goes like this. For a Jew, to work with the Trinity, to believe in what's called Shituf. What is Shituf? What's a Shutaf? A what? Shutfin? What? Kishuf. That's Kishuf. Shutaf, Shutfin are what? Partners. So Shituf is what Halacha calls the Trinity. There's God plus this power, plus that power, plus his helper, plus his assistant, plus his co-worker. That's Shituf. Now Shituf, that's the halachic word, is that permitted for a Jew? Absolutely not. If I started talking about, you know, the Trinity from the Bima here, you'd walk out, and rightfully so, and you'd throw some rotten eggs at me. However, for a guy to practice Shituf, that might be okay. We don't encourage it, we don't suggest it, but that might not be usur, at least not usur enough, to make it one of the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, for a guy to practice Shituf. And therefore, let's assume there's a little bit of a theological discussion as to the nature of Catholicism versus Protestantism. Protestantism, right? Is that right? Okay, you got it. It might depend on different perspectives of Christianity, but certainly some versions of Christianity, some brands, might not be, or let's say the opposite way. Let's assume that Christianity, for a guy to practice Christianity, would be Shituf, and therefore maybe not usur for him, and therefore we would not consider that person to be an idolater or a pagan, and therefore we would have the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim, which we know means taking care of him or her, and if you could take care of that person, so of course, what would Rav Avadya Yosef answer the ger about his father? You could take care of him, so davening is no different than taking care of the person. So that's how Rav Avadya comes out, that there's no iser, there's no prohibition for the ger son to take care of his father or even to daven on behalf of his father, that his father should have a refuah shleima b'mehera. And then Rav Avadya has five different very cute reasons why maybe it's not just that it's okay, you should daven for him. Well, we could say, of course, well, he's your father. Halacha questions that, is a ger really the son? We know that there's a concept in Gerus called Ger Shenit Gayer, Kakatan Shenolad, that a Ger who converts to Judaism, he's like a newborn person in the sense that he's not connected family-wise to his family. So listen to the few things that Rav Avadya suggests that we could add to the equation. Let's say a guy, the ger, father, the father who's a guy, asks his son, you know, my dear son, you became so religious, you even converted to Judaism. I don't know all the heebie-jeebie Jewish stuff, but do me a favor, pray to your God for me. By asking him that, what does that itself show? It shows that he believes in Hashem and the Mashkiach, it's better than a lot of Jews. So that itself, certainly if a guy asks us to daven, that's certainly a reason for us to assume that he is a ma'amin, and we should therefore daven for him. Of course, we have Darkei Shalom, which we mentioned the Shulchan Aruch already says, that you could do Bikur Cholim for Darkei Shalom purposes. And then there's, you daven for him and he becomes better, what's going to happen? Kiddush Hashem. Wow, these holy rabbis, they pray for you and you all of a sudden get better. That's a Ein Lecha Kiddush Hashem Gadol Mizeh. Beautiful Kiddush Hashem. Then he says, this is going to go back to what you said before, maybe he will become, he'll even get, be so impressed that he'll be, just imagine, you have a guy who is deathly ill. Rabbi comes in, he says, Rabbi, pray for me. Rabbi prays for him, all of a sudden he feels great, jumps out of the hospital bed, starts dancing the Hora with the rabbi, and he's better forevermore. All the scans just, not, they don't see anything on the scans, doctors say, I don't know, it's a miracle. So what's this Gentile going to now inquire about? Hey, how could I like to buy into this? I'm interested in becoming, you know, maybe I'll be a rabbi after in a few years. So maybe he'll be Megayer. Where do we find precedent for such a thing happening? Exactly, Elisha healed Naaman, and after that, Naaman, well, he actually didn't become, it's a question in the Girsa, whether he became a Ger Tzedek, meaning a full Jew, or he just became a Ger Toshav, meaning somebody who accepts upon himself to live an appropriate lifestyle and is allowed to live in Eretz Yisrael, even though he's not of Klal Yisrael. Either way, he was Megayer, some sort of Gerus. So you see precedent for that, that a guy who's impressed by the miracle of how Tefillah heals a person. And then he says, of course we should take care of the guy. After we live in Gullus, we live amongst them. We need them. We need them to help us. So certainly it's appropriate to daven for them. And therefore his skan, Rav Avadia's conclusion is certainly that we are permitted to daven and daven that the person should become a believer in God. Doesn't have to become Jewish, but certainly should daven that the person should have health and everything they need to serve God in their appropriate way. And in the specific case of a son davening for his father who's not Jewish, a son who's a ger, then all the more so, you know, on top of everything, this person brought you into the world and gave you the opportunity to set you up so that you could ultimately find Judaism later in life. And the person who gave you life and set you up so that you could ultimately become a Jew, certainly there's a sense of hakaras hatov. What about Kaddish? That was the second question. But again, this is very halach l'maisa, because any person who's megayer, at some point, their parents will die. So every ger is going to have this shaila. Can a ger say Kaddish for their deceased parents? We mentioned before that a ger halachically is not considered a child of his parents, for halachic purposes. But nevertheless, says Rav Avadia, that person, whether he's halachically your father right now, halachically he's not your father, let's put that aside. Did he make you alive? Yes, he made you be alive. He gave you life. He gave you life. He brought you into Olam Hazeh. You have a responsibility that he should get his just reward for whatever. He deserves his just reward. Goyim, in many cases, do get Olam Haba. Do get eternal reward if they so deserve it. So it's only fitting that you should give them the opportunity to get their just reward for whatever good they did for us and for humanity. And therefore, says Rav Avadia, it will be purposeful. There is a to'elest for the Kaddish on behalf of the person who's nifter. And then, that's the end of the tshuva. With that, we'll conclude. But he just adds one little cute line, which I think is important for us to realize. He talks about just the idea of Kaddish in general, saying Kaddish for a deceased relative in general. He says that Kaddish in general, davening chazan, you know, if a person loses, if a man loses his relatives, so he becomes the chazan, the shliach tzibur for the period of Avelis. He says that's, of course, to be an ili neshama for the deceased person. He says, but that's all overshadowed by the Torah learning that is done for somebody who's deceased. That's seven times more valuable than all the kaddishes and all the being a chazan in the world. The Torah that a person learns on behalf, so we said this is dedicated to Krendel Bas Yitzchak, so the Torah that people do on behalf of somebody who's nifted, that gives them greater reward where they are for eternity, so much more than kaddish and being a chazan, and so something to keep in mind. So we're finished with that discussion. Let's talk about a different story. Let me tell you a story. The story is like this. You have a good friend from high school. And you're from, where are you from? I'm here from Cleveland. And I'm here from Chicago. LA. You're all Brooklynites like me. Fine. Okay, so everyone here is from Brooklyn. But you know somebody who has an aunt who lives far out, like in Pennsylvania or somewhere like that. And you can't ever imagine going, you know, on the other side of the George Washington Bridge. You know, who knows what lurks in the darkness, you know, past Teaneck. So you want to know, could you be mevake chola by telephone? This is halacha l'maaseh all the time. All the time, all the time, all the time, right? You know, visiting hours are between 8 and 8, and your job is from 8 to 8, whatever it is. You can't, it's just not feasible for you to be mevake chola. Do you fulfill the mitzvah in the real sense? Of course, I'm saying it's a nice thing to do. No one's going to question it's a nice thing to do. But do you fulfill the mitzvah of bikur cholim via telephone? So Moshe Feinstein, Igros Moshe, Yoredeya, Volume 1, 223, has a long tshuva, but we're not going to go through all of it. He points out very significantly that we should also be able to point out what are the two main purposes of Bikur Cholim. The two main purposes of Bikur Cholim are A, taking care of their needs, you're not doing if you're far away, and B, davening from their bedside. And last week we discussed why you have to be at their bedside, either because you become acutely aware of their needs, so your tefillah is a much more empowered and powerful tefillah because you realize you see the sick person in front of you. Or the other reason that we said why you have to daven from their bedside, anyone remember the other reason? Yes, what was that? Exactly. The Shechina is above the head, is with a sick person, so the tefillah in close proximity to where the Shechina is, like davening at the Kotel, is much more effective tefillah. So again, if you're on the telephone, so it's nice your voice and the electrical impulses that are coming out of the earpiece of the telephone in the hospital is reaching the bedside, but you are not next to the Shechina, so your tefillah doesn't have that capacity. So the two ingredients you don't have. So if you would ask me, I would say, well, if there are two ingredients, if you have matzah, what happens, how do you make matzah? You take bread, you take water and flour. What happens if you make matzah without the water and the flour? You don't have matzah. So if Bikur Cholim has two ingredients, and you don't have either ingredient, I would say you don't have Bikur Cholim. Yeah, but before we get to the punchline, yes. We'll get there in the next minute or so. You're saying, if you want to take care of, you're saying, you could call all the doctors, and it's more easy for you to call all the doctors and the experts and the... So you're saying you can do that from a distance, but to do all those things, you're going to have to go to them, I guess. So you're saying it's all the time that you're going through your roommate's apartment, picking out all their favorite, you know, Reader's Digests and, you know, magazines and stuff like that. Is that part of Bikur Cholim is only when you actually deliver it? That's a good question. I don't know the answer to it. So it says, yeah?
So before you're saying that part of taking care of someone's needs are
emotional needs. Okay.
Like, you know, girls like to talk. You call, obviously, how they're doing. Sometimes it's like the right friend, but they just can't make it.
Right. I hear that. So emotion's going to go your way partially. So he has a nice way to say it. He says, you didn't listen to how he says it. Listen to the words carefully. You didn't fulfill your obligation of Bikur Cholim, but you were mekayim the mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. Do you hear the difference? You weren't yotzei chovas Bikur Cholim. Your obligation of visiting the sick, you didn't. Was what you did a mitzvah by taping up the telephone? Was what you did a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim? Yes, it was. But it didn't let you cross the finish line. You can't check it off. Yes, I did the mitzvah. Did you do Bikur Cholim today? You can't say, I fulfilled my mitzvah obligation of Bikur Cholim. Was the phone call a mitzvah? Of course it was a mitzvah. Phone call is mitzvah Bikur Cholim. But did it do sufficient, was it sufficiently enough to make you exact? I did what I had to do, I no longer have to do it? No. If you then subsequently, let's say you made a phone call, and whatever, all of a sudden you find out someone's actually driving out there tomorrow morning. And oh my gosh, you have a snow day tomorrow. But there's not really snow on the ground. So, my wife works at a high school in New Jersey. And they, Saturday night, they realized that they went to check, and anyways, that they did have power. Some other place in that township didn't have power. The school did have power, so they called all the teachers and says, I'm sorry, Sunday night they called all the teachers and said, we will have school on Monday. And then about 20 minutes later, my wife gets another phone call. The police department of our township kindly requested that we keep school closed because it's not safe to travel on the road, so there is no school. So my wife had off today because it was, I guess, a snow day. There's no snow on the floor, but okay, I guess life wires are also significant. So you call your friend in the hospital, and because you assume you can't make it, and all of a sudden you get a snow day, you're off, you're able to get there, you have found the time. What do you mean? I fulfilled my mitzvah already, right? Oh, says Rav Moshe, no, you didn't. The phone call was wonderful, and it was a mitzvah phone call, but you didn't fulfill your obligation. If now you have the opportunity, go ahead and visit the person, help them, daven for them while you visit them, as you normally would need to do. That's Rav Moshe's tshuva about Bikur Cholim via the telephone. We'll see how much time we have. Let's talk about there are a few things that I want to talk about that are more exciting. I'm just trying to figure out if we'll do them tonight or okay. We'll do a little bit of this and then a little bit of that. All of you work or go to school, I assume, or are working, looking for work. One of those three. So when do you have time to do Bikur Cholim? On Shabbos. That's the best time to do Bikur Cholim. Some of you might have gone to high schools where you had to sort of log in Chesed hours. So when do you do your Chesed hours? Shabbos afternoon, you do your Chesed hours. Let me read to you a surprising line of Gemara that we'll have to understand why. Amar Rabbi Chanina, this is Gemara Shabbos, Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Amar Rabbi Chanina, Bekoshi, with great difficulty, Hitiru, Chazal permitted, Venachem Avelim, Ulevaker Cholim, B'Shabbos. With great difficulty were they willing to let you actually be Mevaker Chola. Venachem Avelim or be Mevaker Chola. So it sounds like Bikur Cholim is, of course, it is permitted, but it's only because of, great difficulty they actually let you do it. It's almost like, really, Shabbos is not the time to do Bikur Cholim. Whatever, it's necessary, so they had to let you do it. Where is this coming from? So, we know that on Shabbos, one of the things that we do have to do is we have to speak Shabbos dik. What kind? Where does that come from? It's a pasuk. Daber davar a pasuk in, where is it? Anyone know? Ritzocha v'tzecha, where? Yeshaya, terrific, thank you. So it says, daber davar, your speech has to be speak of Shabbos, different speech than during the week. Among the things, and aside from that, across the Shabbos oneg, Shabbos is the day of oneg, of enjoyment, we're not supposed to get ourselves into tsar, we're not supposed to cause ourselves to be b'tsar. I spoke this past Shabbos when I gave the drasha, and I told a story that it was a little bit of a sad story. And before I decided to do that, I was actually going back and forth in my mind if that's an appropriate story to tell on Shabbos because of this issue. Because maybe it's not appropriate to tell a sad story involving somebody was ill and died, and there's a very poignant point that I brought out from whatever that story was. And maybe it wasn't appropriate. In the same way we don't give hespedim on Shabbos, we also don't try to induce crying. You know, even if you feel good when you cry sometimes, it's cathartic certainly, but Shabbos is not a time for tzar. In fact, On Shabbos, of course, we don't have the regular Shemona Esrays, and the main reason for that is you have Bakashos. All the Bakashos, you're not supposed to ask Hashem for specific personal needs on Shabbos. There's a Medrash Tanchuma. I don't know where the Medrash Tanchuma is, but I saw a side from the Medrash Tanchuma that the reason why, listen to this, the reason why, says the Medrash, we don't daven the middle part of Shemona Esrei on Shabbos is because, listen to this, because during Rifa'enu, somebody might insert a name of a chola and come to Tzar. And because somebody might do that, we therefore leave out that whole section of, of Shemona Esrei. So it's clear the Gemara Shabbos, Daf Yud Beis, talks about all kinds of things that you should adjust when you leave, or when you visit a person, you say, as you visit them, you sort of say, you point out that it's Shabbos, and Shabbos, you're not really allowed to pray, daven for somebody on Shabbos. So we'll talk about the parameters of what if they're very sick, what if they're not so sick. Those of you who listen carefully might notice that whenever the Gabbai makes a Misha Berach on Shabbos, he always adds the words, Shabbos hi milizok, refuah krovalavo. It's Shabbos and we can't cry out, but anyway, please give the person refuah shleimah. So it's sort of a little bit funny, because we're doing it anyway. It's sort of like, tell me if you heard this joke. You know that on Shabbos you're not allowed to, Daber Davar says you're not allowed to speak words that are not appropriate for Shabbos, and Mitzocha Fatzecha is an Issa D'Rabbanan, although it's a high level D'Rabbanan because it's quoted in a Pasuk in Nach. There are different levels, right? There's an Issa D'Raisa. Then there's a Chiyuvim from Tanakh, which are only D'Rabbanan. And then after Tanakh is over, there are more Chiyuvim D'Rabbanan. Those are lower level D'Rabbanans. And so Mitzocha Fatzecha, not doing business on Shabbos, is D'Rabbanan, but a Din D'Rabbanan that made it into that Pasuk in Yeshaya that we quoted before. So you're not allowed to buy and sell things D'Rabbanan on Shabbos. We all know that. We can't go shopping on Shabbos. So, fellow comes to shul Friday night and says, "Nit Shabbos geret, nit Shabbos geret." It's Yiddish for nit. It is not Shabbos to speak. You know, we don't speak of this on Shabbos, but you know, I have a van that I, you know, I'd like to sell. Nit Shabbos geret. You know, how much are you asking? Okay, whatever. So the next morning at Shachris, you know, after davening, the fellow says, you know, Nit Shabbos Geret, but I was just wondering what we talked about last night. Are you interested in it? I says, Nit Shabbos Geret. I told my wife that I, you know, I think, you know, we discussed it with my wife and we think we'd like to. We'll work something out a little bit later. Comes to Mincha and the potential buyer says, Nit Shabbos Geret, but I discussed it with my wife and, you know, we're definitely interested in buying it. And the person with the van says, Nit Shabbos Geret, I just sold it an hour ago. So that's the Nit Shabbos Geret. So we do the same thing. Shabbos Yimilizot, we daven, you know, please heal so-and-so, and L'chol Evarim, L'chol Gideim, B'sov Shachol Yisrael, you know, Shabbos Yimilizot. Of course, we can't ask for anything on Shabbos. The Shulchan Aruch gives us some parameters for what you're allowed to do on Shabbos when it comes to things that involve Tzar. I'll give you some of the examples. It says you're not allowed to call out or blow shofaros, which was part of the way in the olden days they used to actually call out to Hashem when they were during an Eis Tzara. When they would have, let's say, a drought, they'd blow shofars at times. So you're not allowed to, of course, blow shofar. You're not allowed to even call out to Hashem if there's a time of trouble, except whatever situations. And similarly, if there's a city that's surrounded by enemies, you are allowed. That's, you know, mortal danger. If there's a boat that's being swept by the storms at sea, they are allowed to pray for salvation on Shabbos. Somebody's being attacked, certainly they're allowed to. And then Shulchan Aruch Arachayim Reish Pei Ches 288 Sif Yud. Listen carefully to the words, because there are two very significant words here. So too, Kol Chola Sheyesh Bo Sakonas Hayom, that there is an immediate Sakana. Zoakim umischaninim. You call out and supplicate, you could daven for that person. And says the Rama, and so too you're allowed to be mevarich, give a misha berach. For chole hamisukan, who's in danger. That means that all week long we daven for people. On Shabbos we have to be a little bit more careful for whom we daven. Meaning what list is in the, there should be, a shul should have two lists. There's a weekday cholim list, and then there's the people who are in more critical condition, more urgent condition, for whom we daven, for whom we say the Mishnah Berurah on Shabbos. And the Mishnah Berurah there points out that for somebody who's not sick, not dangerously ill, we should not daven for them on Shabbos. But if you say Mishaber for somebody who's not dangerously ill, then say Shabbos Himilizok. Which sort of sounds like, I don't have this clearly, too clear, but it sounds like if they're, to daven for them, just to daven for them, that's only permitted if they're dangerously ill. To say Mishaberach, that will be okay even if they're not dangerously ill, but then you have to say, I'm not really supposed to do this, so Shabbos Himilizok. But if they're dangerously ill, and you make a Mishaberach, then you would not have to say Shabbos Himilizok. So just to put things together, if there's somebody who's very ill, you can daven for them on Shabbos, meaning deathly ill, God forbid. If somebody's not, you as an individual should not daven for them. What happens? So we see you're allowed to visit them. It's not so great. But if that's when we have time, so yes, then we should do Bikur Chol on Shabbos. Of course, even more so nowadays when sometimes people feel the loneliness most on Shabbos, because that's, you know, family time. So certainly there's even more of a need to take care of that emotional aspect on Shabbos. But let's say we all know that there's some people who take life very seriously. You know, some, we all have a friend that, you know, when they come out of a hospital, they're green for like, you know, like 3 days. So if you know somebody like that, that's the person who should not do Bikur Cholim on Shabbos. The Shari Tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch says that somebody who is, I don't remember the Hebrew words, I translate it as faint-hearted and is very pained by, you know, seeing the suffering of a chola, should actually not. They think they're doing a great thing, right? They're being back a chola, but if it's going to come back, it's going to rebound in your face and cause you to be very pained and hurt by it, you should not go there on Shabbos, because the oneg nitan, Shabbos is given for oneg, for pleasure, for enjoyment, the lo litzar. If a person has a little bit more of, you know, has a little bit more of their defenses, or they're, you know, they're used to it, or whatever it is, that doesn't, you know, go rebound in their face so much, they, you know, definitely could and should be mevakre cholim. But of course, let's say you have two equal opportunities to visit a person. You could either go tomorrow afternoon when you don't have work, or Saturday afternoon, and you know it's not going to be like, oh, they need people on Shabbos more than equal in all senses. You definitely should not go on Shabbos if you could equally go on a Tuesday, if a person has such a choice. Let's finish off today with a very funny twist. And you'll sort of, once you hear the question, you'll say, come on. But we'll see, this is a serious discussion. Question for you? Yeah.
On that thing, what if you have the option of going both times? Should you not go on Shabbos because you're going Tuesday?
Well, I would say go on Tuesday, and then Shabbos comes. Should you go on Shabbos? Yeah. Ein lahem shir. Bikur Cholim is one of the things that ein lahem shir. So every time that you go, I'd say if it's one or the other, pick the other, not Shabbos. If it's both, I would say go both. The ma'aseh is mutter. It's just, it's something that we don't, if there are other options, the other options are better. Not that it's bad. Again, it's not bad to be mevakeh cholim on Shabbos. It's just better to be mevakeh cholim during the week, all things being equal. Yes? The last three words of Shabbos Yom Lezach, they're muttered quickly under breath at the very, very end. No, only for the Mishaber for Cholim.
What I'm saying is, you know, when they stop, and then you say...
Then at the, they'll say the name, they'll pause for the names. After the pause, they'll continue. And then the last three words, right, like before Vinom Ramein, right before they will say, like, Shabbos Himilizok, Urufu Krov Alava, something or other. So it's at the very, very end. So this time, this week, you listen carefully, and you'll realize, you'll hear that Shabbos Himilizok, and you'll say, hey, I know why we do that. In the year 1814, this is a real shaila, cited in a sefer called Petach Hadvir, quoted by Rabbi Avadi Yosef and Yalkut Yosef. The year 1814 or 1813, I was just trying to do the math. The Hebrew date was 5574, so I tried to subtract quickly. I think it was 1813, 1814. There was a fellow who had a few brothers who was very sick. And he desperately wanted his brother in another town to daven for him. But it was Shabbos. So the question was, could he write a note, telegram, or write a note and send it out of the Tchum Shabbos? So he'll write it be'isser, he'll send it be'isser, so that his brother could daven for him who's a cholish shayesh basakana, somebody who's dangerously ill, are you allowed to be mechal Shabbos to inform the family so they could daven? Again, we're not talking about informing the family that the person has, God forbid, something terrible happen. Inform the family so that they could daven for the person. So, the Pesach HaDvir answered, what do you think? Is it going to be mutter or aser? I have to change my style, okay. what do you say? If you're the rabbi. Somebody knocks on your door, urgent messenger from the hospital three blocks away, and says, Rabbi, so-and-so is deathly ill, and he desperately wants his brother in somewhere way, way far away, like, you know, even really past Teaneck, wants his brother over there to know about his illness so that brother, his sister could daven for him. What will you be mechalosh? What are you, the rabbi? What are you going to say?
The shaila is passed on Shabbos.
Friday night.
So the messenger.
Saturday morning. Friday. It's going to happen. It has to happen very quickly. This guy is mamish.
How far away would it be?
A 2-hour walk is outside Tchum Shabbos, isn't it? Tchum Shabbos is Alpayim Ama, right? So first of all, we're talking about writing a letter. Second of all, we're talking about, you're saying you could just send the message without a letter. Okay, I guess they had to write it for whatever reason. Tchum Shabbos is 2,000 amos. How far is 2,000 amos? So how big is an amma? How big is an amma? How big is this? How big is this? A foot? Okay, it's a foot and a half. What's the difference? It's my amma! So an amma is halachically between a foot and a half to 2 feet. It ends up here being a kula. Let's assume an amma is 2 feet. So 2,000 ammas is 4,000 feet. How many feet is a mile? Are there any Canadians here? Okay, you're pater from this question. Everybody else should know. How many feet are in, you're assertive. How many feet are in a mile? You shouldn't even, Jesse, how many feet are in a mile? 5280, thank you. So 2,000 amos, which is what you're allowed to walk outside the outskirts of a city. I know my customers, right? 2,000 amos outside of a city is the distance that you're allowed to walk on Shabbos, outside the edge of a city. That's Tchum Shabbos. So 2,000 amos is 4,000 feet. A mile is 5280. So we're talking about 4/5 of a mile. If I'm not mistaken, the New York Roadrunners Club claims that a mile is an 18-minute walk is a mile. Right? 18 minutes of walking is a mile. So we have some marathon runners here, that I know. So if 18 minutes is a mile, let's take out your pens and pencils. Let's do, you know, what are they called? When you have to figure out the fourth, the variable, the x, and you have three numbers that you know. Okay, so 4,000 out of 5280 equals x minutes out of 18 minutes. Do the cross multiplication and divide by divide by 18. What do we get? How many minutes to walk is outside of Tchum Shabbos? No one takes me seriously here. Okay, so it's 4,000. No, it's 4,000 times 18 minutes. Divided by 5280. 13.63 minutes. If you go on a 14-minute walk outside of the outskirts of the city, you violated Tchum Shabbos. That is frightening for a bungalow colony. New York City could walk quite far. New York City, history tells us that the Jews used to walk from Flatbush over the Williamsburg, from Williamsburg over the Brooklyn, over the Williamsburg Bridge to Manhattan. So like all the it's all one big happy, you know, New York City. But if you're in the bungalow colony, 14 minutes past the last house or the gate at the edge of the bungalow colony, let's assume there are no bungalow colonies along the way, that's outside Tchum Shabbos, that's Elser. Maybe it's only Elser Drabana, maybe the rice has to be longer. Oh, and it's explicit. It's not only is it in halacha, it even made its way to Mishpacha magazine. Right, so like the Mishnah Berurah.
Yeah.
Right. So 14, okay, so they wanted to travel all the way 2 hours out. So A, you have an Isser D'oraisa of Ksiva. You have an Isser of traveling outside of Tchum Shabbos. Could you send this letter? Because the guy wants, so Rabbi, what should I do? Can I write the letter? Can I bring it to whoever it is? So if you're the rabbi, you would say, what? Usher. Glad you're not the rabbi. Who can give me a kula? Come, we need someone to give me a kula. Why could we, how could we permit this? Yeah, but you can't be Mechal Shabbos because you don't have time. Or could you? What? They're going to live or die regardless of, unless you're saying that the other person's tefillah. Oh. Oh, that's getting to a very different kind of issue, yeah? So you're making a very bold statement, which is good. I'm not saying you're right or wrong. I don't know if we'll have time to discuss that today. But you're making a very bold statement. If you could be Mechal Shabbos to drive someone to the hospital, you should be Mechal Shabbos to drive somebody to the Rebbe's Kever to daven for them. Did I misquote you? Or? That is what you said, right? Okay. Fine. So you said something like that. That was the point of what you said. Okay. So this rabbi, the Pesach Hadvir, was a little more creative than you were, no offense. He said, well, have a guy write it. Does that solve all the problems? Does it solve the problems? Are you allowed to tell a guy to just do things for you?
No.
Absolutely not. It's an Isra of Amil and Achri. Exactly. If you actually want to medicate somebody, so then you could have the guy do the malacha to help somebody who's ill. My first shiloh when I became rabbi here 1 year ago on Yom Kippur. As a young lady was walking up the steps to Kol Nidre, she twisted her ankle. I had to know, could she be driven by a guy back home? Because she couldn't walk. So that was my first, that was my induction. So what's the halacha? Okay, so I'm in good shape then. So the halacha is that for a chole b'chol gufa, somebody who is not deathly ill, not too much deathly, we're talking about somebody who's sick. It's not just a little bit of a pain, it's that they can't function properly. That's how I know Rav Shechter, I think, got from maybe from the Rav, but Rav Shechter likes to say, a chole b'chol gufo, chole she'ein bo sakana, is not deathly ill. The halacha for which you're allowed to take medicine and ask a guy to do halacha for you is somebody who can't function properly. So if a young lady twisted her ankle and can't walk, that would be defined as a chole she'b'chol gufo, because they can't function properly, and therefore you could ask a guy to drive that person back to their house on Shabbos, on Yom Kippur. So the Pesach Dvir said, you should be able to, again, this is a little bit different, because here you're not healing the person, you're just sort of sending a message for the person. So to heal the person, definitely you can have a guy do. But what about take the letter? Pesach Dvir says that it would be permitted to ask a guy to write a letter on Shabbos, and I guess for the guy to deliver it to that faraway town, so the brother will find out about his sick brother's desperate situation, daven on his behalf. However, why is that? Because we find a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch 306:9, I assume Aruch Chaim, the Shulchan Aruch writes that when a person is sick and they have something burning on their mind, we are concerned with psychosomatic illnesses. If a person is very ill, you can violate halacha in certain instances to assuage their concerns, their emotional, mental imaginations and delusions even, sometimes, if that's what they need to stay calm and healthy. And if you have someone who's deathly ill and they say, I want this, you could provide that for them, even though it's not medically necessary. So too here, shaloti taref da'ato, that his mind shouldn't be swept away from him. That's how the Shulchan Aruch says. He shouldn't be, how do you call somebody crazy in Israel? Tamaturaf. You're, literally means your mind is grabbed. Like you're out of your mind. That's how you call somebody, you're out of your mind. That's what you'd say if you were Israeli. Tamaturaf. It was something like out of your mind. So shaloti taref da'atos, that the sick person's mind shouldn't be just, you know, they shouldn't go out of their mind. You're allowed to violate this. But, that's because the person requested it, and if you don't listen to their request, and they desperately want it, if you don't do what they desperately want, they might go out of their mind and make them more physically ill. I wonder how early modern medicine discovered psychosomatic illness, because these are halachas that are, you know, clear in the Shulchan Aruch from 500 years ago, and even in the Gemara. So I wonder how early, you know, modern medicine has realized this. But what about, and I don't know, maybe we won't answer this, but I'll ask you the question. What happens if the sick person himself doesn't ask, could you please do this to me, if not I'm going to go crazy and die more quickly? They just say, nothing. They're sickly, they're sick in bed. Are you going to be allowed to be Mechallel Shabbos, with a Reitzer, or just with a guy, to send a letter to the Rebbe, to send a letter, a kvittel to so-and-so, a letter to the Kotel, a letter to put somewhere, or a question that was actually talked about in a Mishnah. Mishnah in Shabbos talks about, can you write a kameya? What's a kameya? An amulet. An amulet to heal somebody. So that's an actual Mishnah, and I'll give you a week to look up the Mishnah somewhere in Maseches Shabbos. Okay? Thank you very much, and we'll continue next week. I thought I'd get to tonight, I didn't. But next we're going to talk about what if somebody is very sick and maybe suffering terribly, maybe not, could you actually daven that they should die? That's a very different kind of question that we didn't discuss, and could be halacha l'maaseh, unfortunately. We'll talk about that next week, I don't know.